I think you hit on something that's even more fundamental than, let's say, the artifact of a book, which while you were talking, the phrase that came to mind was, if they're not talking about you, they're not thinking about you. We're back at last. Welcome to the Nearbound podcast. We're live in the studio for you audio-only listeners. This is one of the ones that we could say, come on over to the YouTube channel to see Isaac and I in person arguing, fighting. No, I'm kidding. I'm having a great time. These are my favorite ones. And
let's argue. I'm ready.
Let's argue. Yeah. Let's fight.
So, it was what, a month ago? Maybe even more when we were here.
Yeah.
Face-to-face. Because it was right before the book launched.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with that. I got three topics today that I want to kind of dance around on. The first one is the book, Nearbound and the Rise of the Who Economy. I should have brought a physical copy with me, but...
I know, because the hardback's out now.
Yeah, finally. I just got notification that it showed up at my house today, so I still haven't seen it. But the reception, I mean, the book came out and did really, really well. A lot of people have been sharing about it, posting about it, which has been really fun. So I want to hear from you. What has the reception been? What have you heard? What are people saying? And I know there's a lot of good stuff, but there's also been some, I wouldn't say criticism, but like debate, discussion about, like with any kind of new paradigm.
I'm not sure that the debate and the criticism that I've seen was about the book, was about partnerships writ large.
Yes.
Right. So like it spurred some like, hey, is this a hype cycle for partnerships? And then, you know, I think people were like, hey, no, there's actually some work behind this. But
Well, then just start with the book reception.
Right.
What have you got? Man, what have you been hearing?
Floored and grateful. So like anyone that's picked up a copy, you know, I'm grateful and humbled and honored. I mentioned in the acknowledgments, like I wanted to measure the success of this book, not by how many copies were distributed. And it's cool to see 1,000+, you know, out there in the market, but really about how many times people were picking it back up and underlining it and actually putting things into practice. And what I've loved the most about it, which has surprised me because, I'm typically like an audiobook guy myself, in many ways, and then physical and some other ones. But how many people DM'd me? I mean, LinkedIn was blown up for, and it still is, with people, you know, doing their summaries and all sorts of different things. But people picking up specific things from areas of the book that I'm like, you've read it that far?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Whoa. Like, so I'll shout out Chris Murray. He's done a lot of stuff with us, you know, in content and has just been, you know, a partner leader for a long time previously at Lead Forensics. And, you know, he got to the Rhythm of the Business chapter, which is like the second to last chapter. And he went, that has been the piece that's been missing for me, right? Like I've not baked my partnership stuff into the cadences and rituals of each department. And then it's like, well, what am I promoting and what am I tolerating? So like he took the core message from the book, you know, overlaying against each department in those plays and been like, that piece was missing for me versus someone else that was like, you know, I was talking to a CMO and it was like the jobs to be done for the four different roles in Nearbound Marketing. And like that, you know, section for her was like, that has been missing for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't need new roles for this. I need to make sure that these jobs to be done are being fulfilled by the marketing org. So I think that's what was so cool, at least for me, was seeing all of the reception come back and not just like hype about like a book, but specific things that people are taking and putting into practice. Because I think this is going to be a book for the next several years that people are picking back up and putting things into practice, whether it's for the first time or going back and being like, hey, I fell off that horse, right?
It's so handy to have a jumping off point for conversations. And like you could say, oh, well, everything in all of these chapters exists in some other form. There's podcasts, there's articles, there's with each of these things kind of separately, something about that physical artifact that like puts it in a different place in your brain. And it allows, even if you're only going to talk about one small subsection, just the section on Nearbound customer success, for example, the fact that it's like, hey, here's this book. Now I'm going to go to my CS manager or to my colleagues and say, hey, have you looked at this chapter? There's something that like, it just makes conversations easier. And again, I've said from the beginning of the Partner Hacker days that I see marketing, good marketing, as the process of creating, fostering, and encouraging conversations. Like I like the word conversations more than community, events, content. I feel like all of those are just different places to have conversations. But the thing they all have in common is like conversations around some kind of set of shared ideas. So like, I don't care where they're happening. They're happening in Slack channels, on LinkedIn, all the usual places. A book introduces a new sort of surface area for conversations to start or to be encouraged. And it has just more weight than like, here's a thread in Slack, or here's a LinkedIn post, or here's an article, or here's a podcast episode. Those are all great places for conversations to take place. But when you can say, here's a book, there's something heavier about that that leads to like bigger conversations. And we saw this once the book launched. How many conversations did people start with you that they didn't start before when these things were in different formats? So there's just something like special about that, that I feel like it unlocks. There's like a new level of confidence that people are like, they feel less alone when it's in the format of a book, because it's like more official. It's more substantial. Then they're like, okay, now it's real. Now it's not just a bunch of nerds in some forum on the internet. It's an actual book. I can use this. I have the confidence to go talk to other people about these ideas.
So I think you hit on something that's even more fundamental than, let's say, the artifact of a book, which while you were talking, the phrase that came to mind was, if they're not talking about you, they're not thinking about you. And, you know, how true is that? Well, measure that within your own company. So some of the things that surprised me about the book was like, I'll shout out some people by name because they're, you know, awesome. Like Brandon Redlinger. So Brandon was like, you know, an OG, you know, marketer under John Miller, who was the founder of Marketo. He was the head of marketing at Engageo. Like, his resume is solid. Brandon's a good marketer, and he's now the new VP of marketing at Chili Piper, right? So like, Brandon messaged me about how he liked the book. And I'm like, that's a VP of marketing. That's not a VP of partnerships.
Yep.
Right. But the conversation that you can then go have with that VP of marketing, like if you're in a company and your executives are not talking about you, they're talking about your program or your ecosystem or whatever you want to call it, their nearbound plays, like if you're not a part of their cadences and rituals, if you're not starting conversations, they're not thinking about you. And I think this is a fundamental problem to partnerships people that I will even fall into the trap of. People on my team will fall into the trap of, is that you're out there doing, you know, God's great work in the market, so to speak, right? You're out there evangelizing like partnerships. Yep. We're building these things outside of the company, but then your internal employees or internal executives, they're not talking about
yes.
you.
Yes.
Oh, and they're not thinking about
me,
you.
But people inside the company are like, wait, who's that guy?
What is it? What do they do? Right. Exactly. Or like, you know, the last time you came to them was with a problem.
Yes.
Right. Or the last time you came to them was with an idea.
Yeah.
But like, how do you bake that in? So like, I think the book allows, and I've seen it allow, like I just got a text message today from Braden Young, co-founder of Sendoso. Like, that's not a partner persona, right? These are people that are, I think, leaning into this, and the book allows a forcing conversation much more so than, you know, just another podcast or a link or yeah. whatever. Like, there's yeah. something, you know, it's a number one bestseller across multiple categories.
Yeah, yeah. It crosses, you know, Jay McBain talks all the time about watering holes, and you have these watering holes for different personas. Even though you could share the Nearbound podcast with anybody from any department, it's a watering hole for partnerships people. So when something is there, it's sort of perceived as, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like it, like if a marketing person shared something from Reforge with their product guy or whatever, with a CS team, there's like a, yeah, yeah, they're sharing some marketing podcast.
Right.
But a book is bigger than that, right? It's like, no, this is about business as a whole. This is about the way that we go to market. So I think it just elevates those combos. Well, I want to tap into, even though it wasn't specifically about the book, we had this great, quite lively conversation on LinkedIn spurred by Chris Walker, who we had very recently on the Nearbound podcast. We had a great conversation about moving from the how economy to the who economy, where we pretty much aligned on everything in terms of, this is how marketing is done. You got to surround the buyer with influence. It's about who you reach them with, not about what you're saying. And it was like, we were vibing, dude. I mean, he even said he got chills during part of the conversation. It was awesome.
You were on point. So folks, if you've not seen Isaac on that podcast episode, that's the one to get pure Isaac on.
Yeah, let me talk about marketing instead of instead of anything else. But it was a great episode. And then like a week later, he posts to LinkedIn like, yeah, you know, partnerships and Nearbound is kind of all the rage right now, but there's some ways that it really goes bad. And he listed some. And he's like, I've seen it go well in a couple ways, but it was kind of like overall came across as like, hey, let's not just like get overhyped about something that doesn't work very well. And there were some great back and forth. Some of the comments were like super harsh, like, oh, this is all just hype and buzzwords. And some were like very, very other side, like, no, this is it. You got to survive. Anyway, great convo. And in fact, Ella Richmond on our team, shout out to Ella, did an excellent write-up in the Nearbound Weekend Edition, breaking down some of those comments and kind of giving a response to some of them. So you should check that out. But I wanted to hear your thoughts. I'm sure you read the thread. I'm sure you read some of our, you know, show guests in the past, like Pete Caputa and others were getting on there and mixing it up. And it was like, you know, heated debate, but all friendly, all, I think, frankly, valuable and useful. So I'm curious your take on the, okay, Nearbound, it's just a buzzword. people go around saying it like it's something cool, but it doesn't mean anything. And in fact, partnerships are often a big waste of time and money. Like, give me your honest take to that.
Get in the arena. What do I mean? What a listener of this podcast wouldn't know, or anyone that read Chris Walker's post talking about this, they wouldn't know this fact. Do you know that I have a monthly call with Chris Walker and have for a year? Like, that's an honest statement. Chris and I talk every single month and have for over a year, right? And I made that an objective kind of from the beginning, right? Like, I'm going to go to the people that influence my buyer.
Yep.
And I'm going to talk to them and I'm going to have hard conversations. So did I expect Chris to post like that? Of course, right? Like, we have serious conversations about what he's doing, you know, his business, his kind of take on things. And I think there's absolutely a mutual respect there. Chris has a far bigger brand and reputation on LinkedIn than I do, but we have a monthly chat and we have for a while. So it's not about scoring points on LinkedIn. Like, I didn't even chime in on the thread because there was tons of comments and conversations. Yeah. I was like, no, too late for me. But like, I think what Chris points out is something that people tend to be scared of. They're scared to show up to the table and have that debate with someone like a Chris. So like, if you actually are lucky enough to have a seasoned CMO who's good at, you know, her job, or a seasoned CRO that's great at their job, or, you know, a CPO, and you're like, we got to die on this integrations hill, you need to be able to engage in uncomfortable conversations. And I think that's the thing that a lot of folks are scared of today. It's like, everything's so bad. Like, why can't you air your grievances in a way that you're actually engaging in the difficult debate? So like, what Chris pointed out is, he, you know, I won't name the companies because I know the companies he's talking about, is that, you know, some IP infringement and stuff like that, where he's partnered with, you know, tech vendors and like seen, you know, his intellectual property ripped off, his lexicon kind of, you know, perversely used in ways that kind of like detracted from, you know, his core following. So he's seen, you know, some bad sides of partnerships. And I think as a media agency that had massive demand, like, he's the exception to the rule. And so is Refine Labs versus, let's say, the thousands of HubSpot agencies that, like, you built a better business because you were a HubSpot agency. Like, I know this because I've talked to the CEOs. I've heard their stories. They've sold their companies. That, you know, look at Jen Spencer at Smartbug Media from Ryan. Like, that's grown from what I've seen was nothing to, you know, multi-hundred person agency. And that would not have happened, I don't believe, without the HubSpot partner program. So, yeah, like, fighting those fights, but then, like, it's not to say there isn't a gargantuan body of evidence that points in another direction. And I'm happy to have that conversation with Chris or with anyone. So I think it's good. Like, if they're not talking about you, they're not thinking about you. That's the point, though, is like, yes. Why was Chris talking about it?
Right.
Right. We were having a conversation.
Because it's out there.
He's thinking about
it. And other people are talking about it too. And I loved it. I remember somebody on our team was like, hey, did you see this post that Chris Walker just did where he's kind of like crapping on Nearbound a little bit? And I'm like, let me see. And I'm like, oh, I love this. This is awesome. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yes, of course. It's not all sunshine and rainbows. And this stuff doesn't automatically work. Like, and there is a level of, well, there's two separate points. One, let's just talk about it doesn't always work.
Right.
So let's take when Inbound, you know, came about. If you, there is absolutely a way to be like, man, that Inbound stuff is a bunch of crap. You know, I spun up a blog and started doing a bunch of content and trying to help my buyers and then, like, you know, nurture them down a funnel as they indicated interest in my content, and it didn't work. It didn't do anything.
Right.
Well, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you're doing it wrong, right? There's kind of I love Brian Belfer's model here. It's like product market channel model fit. Sometimes your business model is one that Inbound doesn't really work for. Sometimes the channels you're using are the wrong ones. Sometimes the kind of content you're like, all of these things, Inbound doesn't work magically. It's not like people just said, okay, spin up a blog. Now you're good to go. Demand will start coming to you and your sales reps will just have a flood of people filling out forms asking to talk to them. Of course not. Does it mean that you should ignore Inbound and say, well, that's all crap? No, you'd be ridiculous to do that. And I think it's similar with Nearbound. It's like, oh, great. I got to reach people through the people they trust. I got to work with my partner team. Awesome. That'll drive revenue. No, it's hard work. You have to get in the trenches. And I think the question is like, so when it comes to the buzzwordy part, this is sort of the part two. A lot of people who are not in marketing or are like anti-marketing or whatever, even some marketers, they love to get real cynical and jaded and be like, that's just a new phrase for an old thing. That's true a lot of times. But a lot of times old things need new phrases because the old phrases have baggage and people can't see how to apply an old concept in a new setting if it still has the old label. And they get stuck there. It's like channel. when you say channel, people think of something different.
The handbags, right? Chanel?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So like you have to invent new words sometimes. Like I remember when Drift, you know, was coming on the scene and it was like conversational marketing.
It was a terrible, terrible two words.
And,
terrible.
And whether or not it's well chosen, there's two things that are equally true. One, like, okay, you just made up some phrase to try to market the same old thing that's like, whatever, it's chatbots. That's true. But it's also true that it worked and it was necessary. It got people thinking differently. Like, okay, what do you mean conversational marketing?
Right.
What does that actually look like when it's done well? If you just say chatbots, people don't ask any questions. They think they know what it means to do it well, whether they do or not. If you say conversational marketing, they have to ask, what is that? If you just say partnerships, people think they know what that means, even if they don't. If you say you need a nearbound strategy, it forces the question, okay, what does that look like? And I think that's the whole point, is forcing the question and forcing right. people to have those conversations. When is it done well? When is it done poorly? And it's like, at the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter if it's hype or buzzwords. What matters is the conversations that are being had. And if you step back and ask yourself, because it's easy to be like, oh, nearbound is a bunch of hooey. Okay, then just forget the word nearbound. Let me ask you a question. Is outbound getting easier?
Right.
Is inbound getting easier? Are buyers more or less influenced by the voices around them than they were 5 years ago? Are they going to be more or less influenced by those voices versus Google searches and whatever in the next 18 months? The answers to those are obvious to everyone. So what is your strategy to reach those buyers through those voices? I don't care what you call it. You got to be thinking about that. Buyers have changed. Go-to-market must change with them. The fact that we're putting that in a phrase nearbound, to me, makes it easier to talk about. If you don't like that, throw it out the window. But the conversation has to be had whether you like it or not.
So a couple of things. I was on my phone here because I was
I was kind of hurt. I know. I thought I was on a bit of a heater. And
you're totally on a heater. No, I was, and I was paying attention.
I need lots of feedback, Jared.
No, this is totally relevant. So what I was doing is I was looking at
Alex clapped for me, by the way. Yeah, that's all I needed.
It's incredible. No, so like we're looking up some stuff in real time. We're gonna pull in young Alex here. Alex, I just emailed you something. Get that report and find for me the partner-led growth section, because I want to demonstrate something to you. So there's and I'll come back to that in a second. So running off of your point around like why it's important to have like that new lexicon and separating it from, let's say, the baggage of the past, where do partnerships and, let's say, social interact? There was no playbook for that, as evident by there was no playbook. Like, yeah. Where is it? Nearbound social, to me, is the first thing that I've ever seen codified around partnerships and social media.
Or events. It's like, what is it, partner events? Oh, it means you do an event with a partner. No, nearbound events is a whole different thing.
Right. It's an evolution of something where you might have, like, if you have a historical background from channel or from, let's say, B2B, you know, strict partnerships, where you layer on that new thing and you go, actually, that's where the leverage is.
Yes.
Right? The leverage isn't in, you know, the strict old way. It's in that, oh, these other things changed. And it applies across multiple different things. Like, let's say, for example, influencers, right? Like Scott Leese has been someone that's been influential to me for a long time. And Scott was, you know, showed up on our signup form every once in a while. Is like, who sent you our way? Like, that's an influencer. Well, tell me where Scott Leese fits inside of a partnership agreement. Scott Leese, the individual,
you got to make up a new one.
You have to make up a new one, right? So like when things are changing, you're supposed to change too. And I think, you know, when it comes to nearbound, like there was this report that came out. I don't know if you found that or downloaded that report. All right, young Alex. We're going to bring young Alex up here. So I want to read this because it's really good. I think it illustrates the point.
The arm of Alex.
So this is from, let's see, Scott Vaughn. So he has 120,000 followers on LinkedIn. Right? So this is a legit voice. And he came out with this marketing AI kind of report. Oh, and then really it just died? How did that just happen? We have a young Alex come
pick it. IT help desk.
Like literally IT help desk. I've never even seen that face. What is that face? I have no idea what happened. I was just about to read this amazing thing that demonstrates. So like partner-led growth and like where this gets incorporated into. It's most companies, and let's say Chris Walker's criticism, aren't thinking about how a company could be built that way. Or like, let's say like, here's an example of why it doesn't work. Well, what are the examples that do work? You have to have both, right? The yin and the yang. So like Databox is a perfect example of where, for example, Nearbound applies. Why? Because everything that Databox built was HubSpot ecosystem, and then integrating with tons of tools. So like, I'd say they have a very much a nearbound product and a nearbound success strategy. Yep. They're very much focused on customer success, activating integrations. And then the agency program are the ones that are primarily driving in leads. So they don't really even have, though, nearbound sales. They don't really do sales at all.
Yeah.
It's all product led.
Their marketing.
But their marketing
is all nearbound.
Is all nearbound marketing.
Even though it's not done under the guise of like an official
partner marketing. Department. Right. Exactly. Right.
It's that all of their marketers never create a piece of content without bringing in 5 or 10 other people into it with them. So it's like nearbound marketing without a partnerships team.
Right. Absolutely. So like in this report.
So like that doesn't fit under the old rubric. If you're just like partner led, that you wouldn't think of that. So that's like, this is where the new terminology is needed.
Absolutely.
Okay, now let's see if this PDF works.
Yeah, this PDF is going to work. So Scott Vaughn, so the title of the report is Where Vendors, Partners, and Customers Intersect. So we'll put a link to this in it because it's pretty good. And he talks about, you know, GTM models for businesses, tech, and revenue leaders. And he calls out partner-led growth, right? So resellers, channel partners, and solution integrators have been parts of a core GTM model since the dawn of computers and networks, just like you were saying, in the 1980s and 1990s. So that's what you were talking. I was like, yes, of course there's this big
new
history, right? This is nothing new. Because companies have relationships with specialized, often local organizations with specific industry or tech expertise, tech vendors partner with these resellers and service providers to sell and market their products. Today, business and technology professionals prefer to do business within the ecosystems that include the tech partners of their core platforms, like SAP, Oracle, Google, Workday, and Microsoft offer robust partner ecosystems that companies can tap to find the right solutions. Done well, referral and partner introductions to prospective customers are efficient ways for vendors to sell products and services and for businesses to buy them. An emerging term for this model is nearbound, underlining a focus on GTM resources on those accounts nearest to your business.
Bingo.
You see how like exactly what you were saying, this historical thing, but then an emerging term for this model is nearbound, underlining a focus on GTM resources, marketing, yeah, sales, success on those accounts nearest to your business and your partners. I mean,
words are like magic spells. And if he says all that stuff and just says, you know, this is partner led or this is channel, there's something that doesn't force you to stop and consider. But if you said there's an emerging term for this called nearbound, and then all of a sudden you're like, what he just said, he just told me is called something new. So there's something about it that's new and different. There's some application of it that I need to think of in a different way. I have to stop and pause and not be on autopilot. That's the magic of it. That's why you try to figure out. I mean, what did we do for a year at Partner Hacker? We tried to find the right language.
Right. So
to have these conversations, and nearbound was like the perfect word to get us there where we just couldn't quite get with some of the other phrases we tried.
Right. So that's where I'll have the official, like, what's my take on, let's say, Chris Walker's example of where partnerships go wrong? Like, no, where's the examples of where partnerships power everything? And partnerships is not nearbound. Nearbound is where it's a part of the marketing strategy. Yes. It's a part of the sales strategy. It's a part of the success strategy. And when those things happen, I can point to countless examples from platform shifts that we're undergoing right now. It's the platform shift away from this to, you know, AI, right? To, you know, let's say entire ecosystems like the HubSpot ecosystem, where they've gone from, you know, me partnering with HubSpot, they didn't even have an API, to 1,800, yes, you know, integrations. There's, you know, the agency program we were just talking about, there's so many applications and areas where partnerships is changing because it's becoming a part of a company's go-to-market, a separate department.
That's it. And nearbound is 100% about how buyers want to learn and how buyers want to buy. The reason partners are involved is because you have to partner with people in order to reach them in a nearbound way. Not because you start with saying, let's partner, and then let's figure out what to do with partners. It's like, let's figure out what buyers want. They want to learn about us and engage with us through voices they already trust. So in order to do that, partnering, lots of different kinds of partnering, is a necessary component to the bigger thing, which is a nearbound strategy for reaching buyers.
Well, shout out to the Nelson Wang from Airtable. I thought he did a fantastic job on one of the previous episodes. I think it was a couple back.
He's so good.
Well, he was saying the same thing, like, go talk to your customers, yes, figure out who they do business with. There's your partner list,
yes,
right? So it's that understanding of the customer and understanding, okay, from a marketing perspective, here's who our top customers trust. We should be marketing with them. Like, here's who our top customers trust. This is how we should be selling with them. And then servicing, like, he broke it down perfectly.
We need a bumper sticker that says nearbound happens. It's already happening whether you want it to or not. It's already happening. How are your buyers showing up? Why are they coming to you? They probably heard about you through someone else that doesn't work for you. That's probably how they got there.
So if they didn't, I'm actually more surprised than I'm not.
Yeah, for sure. That's the exception. So it's happening. Are you going to acknowledge that and adjust your GTM strategy in light of that fact? I think is the question. So, okay. That was fun because we can talk about this and get on our high horse all day long. It gets us hyped up. I want to move on to topic number two, unless you have anything to bookend.
No, let's go.
Bookend.
Let's go.
Conversation.
Bookend. Oh, gosh.
Terrible.
That was a great dad pun.
You had a post this week. I guess we'll call this the unlikely bedfellows section of the conversation. Like, weird stuff is going on out there. And you kind of been predicting this type of stuff for a while and observing it as it's happened in different places. But did I just see you post something about Apple and Google trying to like play nice with each other with some new,
So there was a leaked report that Apple was in late stage talks with Google's Gemini powering the new AI features inside of iOS, which is pretty wild. Like, these are enemy number one, enemy number two, right? Like, in terms of the, you know, platform wars, you have iOS versus Android, right? You have Apple versus Google. So then why would they be in conversations? Well, Microsoft has GPT, you know, OpenAI relationship, which that seems like it might be a little bit of a problem with Microsoft now that Microsoft is the world's largest company. And the company threatened most by Microsoft and OpenAI is Google, right? So if Apple, the game theory on this is actually pretty interesting. So if Apple were to partner with OpenAI and Microsoft, it guarantees Microsoft's dominance as probably the world's first $10 trillion company. Like, will Microsoft be the world's first $10 trillion company? That would almost guarantee it. I think they probably will be. It seems fairly inevitable to me at this point. This is not financial advice. you know, whatever, blah, 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 disclaimer. So Apple and Google were in talks, and they are in talks because it seems like Apple is far behind in the LLM race. And I won't give any predictions on whether or not that's going to happen. I think the more interesting trend here is the replatforming of the internet. Like, the internet is being replatformed right now. It's being entirely replatformed. I mean, from hardware up. What's the world's fastest growing company of all time? Let's say public company. Let's say from, you know, 100 billion valuation to a trillion to 2 trillion.
I don't know.
It's NVIDIA.
Oh, that's right.
That's happened in the past couple months.
Just happened. Yeah, that's right.
It's NVIDIA.
I was trying to think historically. I mean, has anything gotten there that fast? I forgot. It's so recent that I actually forgot it happened already.
Right. Right. So, like, when I say the replatforming of the internet, where are all the data centers? What is everything being processed? Like, we're talking about a fundamental architecture away from the CPU to the GPU, right? We're talking about, you know, cloud storage. No, like, massive data centers. You know, there was a rumor that Sam Altman is out trying to raise, I mean, and he didn't confirm or deny this on Lex Fridman. So I watched Sam Altman on Lex Fridman, and he was getting deep into the convo. This was round two, so it was pretty recent, where he was rumored to have been out trying to raise $7 trillion. And I'm like, wait, hold on. I'm not like making this number up. Lex asked him this question, and it's like, were you trying to raise $7 trillion? He didn't deny it. And it was the weirdest thing. I'm like, Lex didn't misspeak.
Even if he wasn't, it's good PR to not.
No, but right. But why? Because there's a replatforming of the internet. Like, that's being moved off of AWS. That's being moved off of Azure. Like, what is that compute? He thinks that compute is going to be like this new currency, and it probably will be. He's probably right about a lot of that. Sam's one of the.
That's how we'll finally break the anti-nuclear power. Somebody will need it.
We're gonna have to. The compute is off the chain. Like, the exponential growth of compute from here seems like power is going to be a big problem. Which I wrote about that in 2011. I'll have to share that with you sometime. It's called
nuclear is the only solution.
No, it's called humanity's ecological imperative. And I talk about this ecological thing. It's crazy. I wrote it in 2011 about how we're gonna have to move from the information age to the energy age.
Yeah.
It's very prescient. 13 years later. So this replatforming from GPU, right, to how data is stored, retrieved, you know, compute. And then that's the foundational level. Well, let's talk about the application layer. What's being built on top of that? You know, your phone. Well, that application layer starts to break down in some very interesting ways, in consumer behavior. I mentioned this on the podcast probably 6-9 months ago, where I said my default tab in Chrome has been Gmail since Chrome's inception,
right?
Or Google search, right?
Yep.
One of those two.
Yep.
my default tab in Chrome, and I don't know when it happened, became ChatGPT.
If I
open my iPhone right now and I look at the bottom, okay, I have phone, I have iMessage, and then I have my mail app. Well, it used to be Safari that was pinned. Now it's ChatGPT. There's an action button on my iPhone. And it says Face ID to open ChatGPT. Like, I can just start talking into my phone and then GPT starts to talk back to me.
You're saying you're going to replace me as a co-host with your phone's GPT
app. Well, there will be people that do that, yep, for sure. So the, you know, there's nothing about AI that's built into the OS of your Mac. There's nothing about AI that's built into the OS of this phone. Into SaaS applications, like the
replatforming is like, hey,
the hardware level, the application layer,
a whole new foundation is being laid. And so what does that mean? That you have to figure out which layer in the stack, companies have to figure out which layer in the stack are they. And when you know we're only one layer or two or three layers, we need to start partnering with the other layers. Like, it kind of changes the playing field for who partners with who and who competes with who.
Well, yeah. So this is the application layer, right? Like the iPhone, right? So all the app store, right? Yep. The app store and all those apps, that's the application layer. Like, it's built into the name. But what underneath that layer does Apple own whenever it comes to AI? Like, yeah, Siri is baked in to your phone. Like, that's on board. Siri is on board on your iPhone.
Yep.
But Siri is nowhere near what it would need to be to perform tasks like GPT,
yep,
right? Much less GPT-5 that's coming out. Like, Apple's going to be behind that ball no matter what they do. So then they're looking at, hey, there's Kevin. they're looking at, Alex, can you ping Kevin for me? See, this is a live podcast. We got young Alex here.
I have to tell you a little anecdote here.
Is it a Kevin joke?
It's just hilarious. Oh, it's not a Kevin joke, okay, but when you said the stuff is built in there, like these early versions of, like, you know, I don't know if you would even call them, they're like voice recognition search, essentially. It's not really any kind of AI, but, you know, Siri and the Amazon Alexa and whatever, looking at how primitive those are. several years ago, we had the Amazon Alexa thing in our house, and my daughter was like 3 or something, maybe right, 4. And she's like being a little kid and saying something stupid. You know, they always say silly stuff to Alexa. And she's like, Alexa, fart fart out of your butt. And Alexa says, Shuffling Songs by Adele. So that has nothing to do with anything except how primitive those were. And if anyone is an Adele hater, I guess I just gave you a little gem there. So.
So that disruption happening, though, so going back to Apple, Google, Microsoft, you know, Apple's having these conversations because they don't have the data centers. They don't have the LLMs. Like, they would need to go probably become NVIDIA's largest customer, which is only going to cement NVIDIA above its own market cap. So they're looking at, like, well, Google already has the compute. They have GCP. They have the AI. Like, so they're talking about it now. Gemini, if anyone saw the Gemini release, like, oh my gosh, it was, I won't get into the political commentary, but, black Nazis, like, it's a little bit woke. Even the Nazis were,
from a PR standpoint, it didn't seem to go.
No, well. not that great. There was a little bit of historical revisionism kind of built into, like, the bias there, which I'm sure they can fix. It was just like a big faux pas, if you will, on, like, you're going too far.
I think it's actually, this is just a random comment, but I actually think it's better for an early release to come out with such an absurd level of kind of like point of view, so that it almost starts off from people recognizing that any of these things ultimately do have a point of view. They always are going to have some kind of constraints program in, so that if you start off where it seems like everything it gives you is great and accurate, I think it's kind of easier for people to just accept whatever answer they get from their chat and, like, never look at primary source material again. But if you start off, if the early versions were so bad that you're skeptical, I actually think that's a better starting point. As they get better, for people to kind of maintain that, like, well, you should always check it too, because you never know what this thing is coming up with. Anyway, that's a
right
point.
So, like, I think as a trend, the replatforming is going to create tons of unlikely partnerships, tons everywhere. I mean, Apple and Google, will they, you know, partner on, you know, AI? Like, who knows? I won't comment on that. but you'll see it elsewhere in very, very strange places and in such public places and such massive places that you probably won't even pay attention to it. And yet you're going to have a hard time justifying partnerships to your CEO when Elon Musk and the CEO of T-Mobile are announcing a partnership to where all T-Mobile phones will have SpaceX compatibility by the end of 2026. Like, that's a big deal. Like, that's billions and billions of new lines and information access happening across the globe in a couple years. That's a strange partnership. So that's a new telecom company that's been minted in the past 2 years, partnering with the fastest growing telecom company in the world to transform the internet access for billions of people. And y'all don't talk about partnerships? What the?
So are you saying that rather than your CEO sitting back with their arms crossed and saying, all right, partnerships person, tell me why I should care about partnerships, the CEOs should be thinking, how and where do I need to start thinking about some crazy partnerships that maybe I hadn't even considered? How am I going to survive? What partnerships are going to let me survive and thrive? They should be proactively seeking out that question. It's like a flipping of the burden of proof from why should I partner to why should I not partner? Like, give me a good reason where I can't or shouldn't, because I might need to survive.
Okay. You're the incumbent and like, you're afraid of a disruptor. Like, okay, Ford and GM partnering on, you know, the super charger network. Like there's examples everywhere where partnering is not just in vogue. It's like, okay, we need to survive. Yep. And then let's say the disruptor versus the incumbent, the disruptor is disrupting partnerships. So like OpenAI, we were just talking about them. Like, that platform shift, OpenAI is trying to lead that charge. It's rumored that Sam's also trying to pursue an AI first phone. And who did he hire? Like, this isn't a BS story. He hired, supposedly, I don't know if this is true, it's a rumor, but he's not out there anymore. He's kind of hidden right now, is Joni Ives, the original Apple, you know, iPhone designer and Mac designer. Like, they're talking, you know, Sam and Joni about an AI native platform. Mm. And think of the GPT store and all of the various GPTs. Yes. Right? Like, imagine that being baked across every, like, it could be a complete re-platforming of the App Store.
Yeah. I was going to say, the App Store alone is not in any secure place.
Yeah, it's not. Interesting.
So you need to be thinking about.
So disruptor, that they're the disruptor, or if you're the incumbent, either way, right?
Because when you're in a kind of a bull market, there's a lot of money floating around. A lot of people are trying a lot of stuff. There's room for like a whole bunch of independent players who are all kind of experimenting with things, and they're slightly different from each other, and they're at different layers of stack, and they may or may not play together, and people kind of have money to play around with some of these different tools and things. As things tighten up, it's like symbiosis to survive. Like, can you find relationships where you are intertwined within the stack of things that people need? Otherwise, if you're out there alone or competing with three lookalikes or like people that can crush you in a minute, you're not going to make it. So you got to look at how can you intertwine yourself within and have a symbiotic relationship with whatever other elements of that stack. Now, the hard thing is they're all shaking out in real time. So maybe this transitions me to our third topic.
Yeah. I mean, interdependence in times of disruption creates resilience.
Right.
Right. Like, you have to find the things that are more resilient and have some interdependence there to like create those mutually beneficial things. It's in the book, the definition of what an ecosystem is as it defines to business. Like, look at ecological systems.
Yeah. Even the hippo doesn't kill that little bird because it cleans its teeth, right? Or the shark with the remora, right?
Bingo. So like, whenever you find animals that do not have interdependence, what tends to happen during, let's say, a drought season, they die.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, and maybe they're just fine when the rains are good, but exactly when the crisis comes, that's when it goes down. So this is a good transition. The final topic, the Jocko podcast that we just had, that was actually pretty wild ride.
Woo! Jocko Vanderkooij, Nearbound podcast episode. That's a must listen watch.
Yeah, I mean, here's the TLDR. He's like, oh, SaaS is dead in 18 months.
He's not kidding. I'm slightly exaggerating,
but that's essentially. So, like, step back and take a breath from that. We had that conversation and you were like, whoo, now you've had a little time to digest it, to think about it. What are you thinking about and what should people be thinking about? You asked a good question. You didn't ask it on the podcast, but after that, you're like, you know, that makes me wonder, like, where have all the founders gone?
Where are the good founders? Where are the remnant?
Where have all the founders gone?
Where are the remnant? Where are the, you know?
Are they fleeing for the hills? Do they see this coming and they're like, I'm out? Is that what you're kind of getting at?
Well, look at all the old school. I mean, what did Jocko say that was like, oof, that may be true in the coming age of AI is the success story from those founders and VCs and their playbook of, let's say, building GTM and B2B from, you know, circa 2000, 2010, whatever that decade you want to carve it up to, 2020s. What about their story in this new platform shift is going to be relevant? Mm. And if you really are honest with yourself and you think about it, and I've been thinking about it pretty much nonstop, I'm increasingly less certain that those lessons will be relevant. And what does that mean? Well, some of those trusted voices that I respect a lot, and if I'm building a revenue team today, I'm still listening to take care of a bunch of different stuff. That, you know, Jocko's takeaway is that GTM will be reduced to a manufacturing facility. And if you are not a manufacturing plant, you know, facility operator, you're going to be in a world of hurt, because 80% of the functions are going to be reduced to a robotic, you know, RPA, robotic process automation, right? Just like the manufacturing facility was. And then it's going to consolidate. How do we know it's going to consolidate? Well, Isaac, how did manufacturing used to work in America? You'd have a chain of what?
Yeah, I'm from Michigan. It was all these little places that existed because Ford needed something, or some other company that serviced Ford needed a thing, and that company needed a thing. And you get increasingly small cottage industries around the big industry that all feed it.
There was a cottage industry of manufacturing that supported. Okay, then what happened when robotics were introduced?
Little by little, it all got integrated vertically into a single sort of factory that does more
Tesla.
And more. And it
eats the gigafactory.
Exactly. It eats up all the little feeders. Yep.
So what do we have in SaaS?
We got a whole bunch of products that sell to other SaaS companies. The reason they sell to them is because those companies have 100 CS people on their team, and they need a tool for those 100 CS people to manage things. But if suddenly you don't need 100 CS people, you don't need a tool. So the company that sells that tool now goes out of business, and the company that sells them tools now goes out of business, right? There's this interdependencies of B2B SaaS selling SaaS to other B2B SaaS that sells to B2B SaaS. Not all of it's going to go away, but it's going to get whittled out and consolidated.
There's a cottage industry of SaaS providers that are facilitating the cloud ecosystem, right?
Yep.
And in that replatforming, it's like, okay, so when Jocko's point was robotics killed the cottage industry of manufacturing, AI is going to kill the cottage industry of SaaS.
Yep.
And it looks through those lenses and that historical perspective and where we're at. And it's like, if you were a cottage industry, you know, like, here's how you build a manufacturing plant. Here's my playbook. And this is how you, you know, do this and this and this. And you didn't have robotics experience. Good luck operating a plant. And the operators of tomorrow are going to have that same thing in their toolkit. So it's a fascinating episode for Jocko to be so bold in what he claimed. You know, how we ended the podcast was like, look, anything that you think is going to happen in 5 to 10 years, it's going to happen in 18 months. And I tend to agree with him more than I'd like to admit.
So, yeah. And your question about, like, where are the founders? Where are the people that the ones that
they're not on the field right now?
They're not on the field.
They're not on the field right now. So, like, there's all these YC companies and AI startups here. And, like, there's a handful of investments going out to them. But, like, where's David Cancel? Well, he's at the Met Gala. You know, like, what's up, DC? You know, he's slinging art. He's doing things. And will David get back on the playing field? I bet he will. But I can almost guarantee you he's not for the next 18 months.
There's so much upheaval that I think there's a lot of people who have succeeded in the past and have the ability to kind of wait for a bit, who are sort of like, I got to wait until it's clear what the playing field looks like. Because it's like, not only, you never know.
And VC dollars are the same right now.
That's right. You never know what the game looks like. That's what you make up as you go. But you need to at least know what the playing field looks like. And right now it's like everything's being reshuffled. It's like you're about to go out and play football and, like, the field is transforming into a different shape and size in front of you.
You've never played, you know, you're playing on a three-dimensional space with football, fourth dimension of time. And it's like, okay, let's throw in the fifth dimension. And right. You're like, how do you play 5D football?
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. So let's end with, because that can sound super like, all right, pack it up, guys. You know, like, we're all dead. Like, what? Let's end with, because to me, every disruption is equal parts opportunity. And in the long run, it's more opportunity. It wouldn't be happening if it wasn't creating value on net, unless it's being, you know, forced at the point of a gun. But it wouldn't be happening in the market emergently unless it's on net creating value. In the long term, the value's there. Just like with manufacturing, you could say, you know, once upon a time, steam shovels replaced ditch diggers and there was disruption and some short-term pain for ditch diggers. In the long run, I don't think any of us would argue we wish we lived in a world where all ditches were dug by hand. So in the long run, I think the benefit's there. But in the short run,
I think
there's
the long
opportunity in the short run too. What's the opportunity? What's the white pill? What's the exciting part, rather than just like, I'm freaked out. My company's going out of business.
I'm, I'm going to say why it's so different is that the long term versus the short term is that
they're the same now. They,
right. The cycle's been reduced so much so that like I'm not sure that the past is an accurate indicator of the future. It not always is, right? Sometimes it is. I think the macro trend, like, oh, this happened over this period of time. It's like, oh, this happened. Does that mean it needs to take a period of time, or can it happen much faster than we like to admit? I think it can happen way faster than we like to admit. And that's not just a scary thought. I think it's a very real thought. So if Jocko's right, you know, 18 months until the end of like the current, you know, market of SaaS, I think that means you have 6 months to save your business.
So what should we be doing?
Right. 6 months to save. Well, I think that's where it comes back to creating that interdependence.
Yep.
Right. And instead of like tons of resources are going to get completely removed from companies. Fact, like gut check me in 18 months. I bet I'm seeing, you know, 60 to 70% headcount reductions that are being replaced by, you know, let's say agents, right? Bots, swarms, whatever they are. So what does that mean? That means that you need to focus your departments right now on getting interoperability and interdependence from a marketing function, from a sales function, and from a success function to where you have something that has leverage and weight over time. Because if it's just activities, inbound activities or marketing app activities, or if it's just sales activities or it's just success activities, you're going to be in a world of hurt if you are not interoperating with a group of people, right, that are going to get through this shift together. And I think that's where it's at. Like you have 6 months to figure this out.
I love
get real, have hard conversations.
I love it.
All right.
Anything you want to say to sign us off?
No, just the regular sign out. Thanks to the crew here at Coastal Creative and Isaac and I being in person. All right, Nearbound, we'll see you around. Until next time on the Nearbound Podcast.